Welcome to Kansas City Cannabis, where local roots and city pride thrive. Whether you're new or seasoned to cannabis, our expert bud tenders offer guidance and a welcoming atmosphere at our four KC locations. Experience genuine service and hometown heart. Visit kccannabis.org for more.
All right, Jake, we had a conversation last week when you were gone. This music, this bump music is great, and it's become Jeff Chedia's music, but if Jeff were to have a little bit more influence on picking his own music, I think we'd be going a little more baby making music style, you know, a little more.
Although I will say, as I thought about that after the show, there was a show I watched when I was a kid that I was always kind of, I really liked the theme song.
Okay.
Greatest American Hero. Remember that show?
Greatest American Hero.
Joey Scarborough.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, I'm
yeah. George Costanza turned it into his voicemail, you know. Believe it or not, George isn't at home. What do you think? What do you think about that? Oh, well, we could go this direction.
I think that came out last time. We thought you were going to get Wally Pipped or Drew Bledsoe.
Marco was here. Yeah.
Wheels of Steel. He busted out some Key Sweat, too.
Greatest American Hero, though.
He
I don't
busted
know about
out
that.
Because it's on my. He's.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah,
he's stealing your moves.
Yeah, I mean he's got my list. When he's filling in for me, he's got my pages, is what we call him here.
I got you.
He just pulled that off my page.
Oh boy.
How's it going, man?
Good, man. I was. I just found out Michigan football has been shut down for COVID, so it's been a good week so far. it's been starting off well. Seven days, Jeff, no football.
You feel like a Kansas football fan. I'm like, oh, good, like, they got canceled this week. I don't have to worry about that.
Man. Christmas came early. Chedia household.
Damn.
I'll tell you what, there's something to be said for that. Like I guess I give credit to the Nebraska University, like everyone involved in Nebraska University, the school, the fans, everything. I've never seen a fan base fight so hard to get their ass kicked every week. You know, like, we want to play. Give us somebody to play. We'll do anything. We'll leave the conference. We'll do anything. And then we'll get smoked by Illinois.
Yeah.
I've never seen a team want so bad. Because, like, as a Kansas fan, I'm like, yeah, oh, cancel the game. Good. All right. Not to worry about that one, yeah. You know.
No, it's been a long year for a few people in the Big Ten. but you know what? But the Lions still coming up.
Right.
Matt Patricia and Bob Quinn no longer there, so I think things are looking up.
They turn everything around now?
I think it's going the right direction.
Does it stun you that Patricia didn't make it through the year?
No, because I think
even after that great play he made in the Super Bowl?
Well, people forget that stuff. what have you done for me lately type of league. They said he was like, I think he was 23 and he won 23 games, and I think he still was 15 games behind Jim Caldwell, who was fired for going 9-7. So that's how they do it in Detroit. But you know what? I will say that right now there's a lot of rumors about Jim Harbaugh coaching the Lions next.
What would you think of that?
I think it'd be what the Lions would do.
That didn't seem like an endorsement.
I don't know if that helps me out being a Lions fan, but I mean, it's...
What's going on with him? He was so successful at Stanford. He was so successful with the 49ers. Yeah. What's going on in Michigan?
You know, I really believe that there's been, I don't want to take too much time, obviously Chiefs and everything going on with the NFL, but I just think that he's always had a tough time playing nice wherever he's been. I think over time people get tired of him or he gets tired of the people he's with. And there's been a lot of transition at Michigan in terms of coaches coming and going, players coming and going, and I think it's hard to build a culture like that. And, you know, college football, college sports, as you know, you just talked about Bill Self, it's so much about players buying in, being part of a family, and if you don't have that kind of atmosphere, that kind of environment, when I watch them play this year, it just feels like a whole bunch of guys who just aren't bought into what's happening there, and that's really the death knell for any coach.
That what a way to fall up, though. You have things go the way they're going in college at Michigan, and then you get the Detroit Lions, you get an NFL job from that?
I mean, he's a good coach.
Yeah.
I mean, and people forget the kind of success he's had there. I mean, he's won 9 or 10 games at least 5 of the 6 years he's been there, and that's probably...
He turned Alex Smith's career around, right?
Alex Smith's career around. He turned Stanford into a powerhouse.
Yep.
So you don't want to diminish what he's done, but I just think that it seems like the shelf life for him wherever he goes is about about 4 or 5 years, and you get beyond that, and you start seeing some issues starting to pop up.
The abrasiveness starts to become a factor. All right, hey, let's get into it. Chiefs, Bucks. You thought the Bucks were going to pose more problems for the Chiefs. They had a 17-point lead in the fourth quarter. Now the Bucks did make it a game. Yeah. What's your takeaway?
Bruce Arians has got to get his situation figured out down there. I think when you look at the Chiefs' game plan, and I think we talked about the defense a lot last week, and I think that what you saw Andy Reid do was, let's go out and be aggressive. Our defense isn't playing that great right now. Let's give them some cover, a la 2018. Let's strike fast, strike often, and when you have a 17-point lead, it helps your defense play a lot better. I thought they played better. They didn't play great to me. They were able to pressure Brady, but Tampa Bay had the ball for 22 minutes and had 400 yards of offense, and I think 4 or 5 plays of over 30 yards, so there's still things to figure out. And one ridiculous block by Ali Marpet, where he literally was holding Chris Jones and Frank Clark at the same time.
That's not a good look.
I've never seen that in my life. They're just holding two guys.
Opposite of a double team block.
600-pound guy just holding them like a guy holding two blocks of ice. But no, I think, look, for Chiefs, it's a huge win. And it speaks to, you know, Mahomes is certainly, to your credit, he's the MVP right now. I think it's him and Aaron Rodgers are neck and neck probably, or 1A, 1B. But Russell Wilson's probably not in the equation right now.
I'll tell you what, as much as I'm on that, when I saw Steve Levy point out the Seahawks schedule the rest of the way, Russell Wilson might put himself back in that. I mean, he might just rack up some serious big games.
That's what I was saying.
You know, I mean, it's a long way to go still.
That's what I was saying. But, you know what? But Aaron Rodgers quietly, 33 touchdown passes, 4 interceptions.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, when you look, if I'm going to use the interception number for Patrick Mahomes as a big feather in his cap, you got to put Aaron Rodgers in the same category because he's only got 4 picks and his numbers are pretty much just as gaudy as Patrick Mahomes at this point.
Yeah. But the point I was going to make is, I mean, as great as Patrick's been and as amazing as he and Tyreek Hill were on Sunday, it's just Andy Reid's coaching brilliance sometimes gets underestimated.
Mm-hmm.
With Patrick, you know, throwing the football around, the highlights are so amazing. And this is probably the third game I've watched them play where they've been able to dial up a big play by taking advantage of a young safety. They did it last week with Jonathan Abram, where at the end of the game, he's trying to run 25 yards to tackle Patrick Mahomes at the end of the game, and Travis Kelce's wide open in the end zone. That's not just play design. That's understanding who you're going against.
Yeah.
And now you got the situation where first big play of the game, they're throwing a 75-yard touchdown pass to Tyreek Hill. And I'm like, man, what is Antoine Winfield doing in the middle of the field? Well, and I thought it was man coverage. When I watched the game, I watched the film, they were playing 3-deep zone. He just ran right past Carlton Davis. And so, obviously, they saw something on film that made them like that look. It wasn't like an exotic play. They just thought they could take advantage of a young defensive back, and they did. So, he really they coached a really good game. On the flip side of it, I don't know what the Bucks were doing. I sent you a text, and I'm just like, what are they doing? What kind of defense is this? How are they covering Tyreek Hill?
Interesting strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for them.
They had 3 third and short situations in the first quarter, and they're like trying to throw the ball each time. It was so baffling to me. And they got it figured out in the second half.
And the more baffling part, Todd Bowles knows what he's doing.
Knows what he's doing.
Right. He's a hell of a coach.
I do think that there's something to be said for the Chiefs get you out of your head, you know, or they get in your head. Some teams do weird things against the Chiefs because they think they need to do more.
I think it's more teams just have a macho approach to it. Where this is what we're
not going
to
change what we're doing.
We're going to this is what we're going to do. We can match them.
That's what I'm saying. Todd Bowles knows better.
That's ridiculous.
No, you can't, Todd. No, you can't. You should know
there's
better.
There's not a single person in the NFL that can run with Tyreek Hill. Yeah.
Look, if that's a lesser
or blitz Patrick Mahomes,
right? If that's a lesser D coordinator, I get it. You're a young guy, but this Todd Bowles is a hell of a coach. Like, he knows what he's doing, and that's, for me, when I'm watching that, that's the baffling part of it. It's like, you know better, dude. What are you doing?
It's kind of like the Ravens game, though, right? Yeah. Like, what are you guys doing, blitzing Patrick Mahomes like crazy?
Yeah, where's the film that shows Patrick Mahomes struggling against the blitz? I want to see that film. It's like the Zapruder film.
Exactly.
It's like, I gotta watch that closely to see how this is playing out. I'm not seeing it happen in real time.
I was telling Jake, like, to me, look, you can argue over who's the first guy you got to take away, you know, Kelce or Tyreek Hill. And in some ways, there's no good answer because both guys will kill you. But to me, number one has to be Tyreek Hill, because if you don't get help over the top, he changes the scoreboard. The scoreboard changes when he catches the ball deep.
Well, it's like, how do you want to die? You want the guillotine, or do you want 1,000 cuts by paper cuts?
But you know what? I'll take my chances that maybe at some point, if you got to take 10 plays to get down the field, that maybe we'll win one.
That's
of them.
What I'm saying. There's more opportunity for error to happen with the death by 1,000 paper cuts, opposed to the guillotine, your head's gone.
If I'm James Bond and you give me the chance, hey, kill me right now or put me in one of those weird death traps that I got 2 hours to figure out how to escape from, put me in a death trap for 2 hours.
All day long.
You know? And they're just like, no, kill me now. You know, just like throw right over the top, boom, boom, touchdown.
Well, if I'm playing the Chiefs, DeMarcus Robinson's going to have 15 catches.
Kevin Watkins is going to
have 10 catches.
Clyde Edwards-Helaire is going to carry the ball 17 times minimum.
That's right. Or Deion Yelder is going to have career high. It's not going to be Tyreek Hill running down the field.
Right.
And most teams this year have taken that approach. You know, it really is. The teams you've seen defend the Chiefs well, or at least contain them, the Chargers, the Patriots, they tend to adopt two approaches. One is to be patient. One is to be patient and disciplined. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, we're not going to fall for the banana in the tailpipe. You know, we're not going to try to make the big play, the big blow-up play. We're not going to outsmart Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid. They understand that. But two, you know, the point you just made, they're willing to do things that are a little bit outside of the box of convention to work well. So when the Patriots play the Chiefs, they always have 6-7 DBs on the field. Mm-hmm. You know, the Raiders went to that move when they played the first game against the Chiefs, and you saw, who was the other team I was just talking about? The Chargers. They tend to say, okay, we're going to win with four up front. That's the only way we can do this. We can bring pressure sometimes just to change it up and give you a different look, but we're not going to try to survive that way. That's really the only thing when people talk about Pittsburgh and how they match it with the Chiefs. That's the only thing I wonder is the Pittsburgh's so blitz heavy in what they do. Will they get out of what they do if they end up meeting the Chiefs in the playoffs at some point? I think they will. But that's, if they don't do that, they'll get run out of the building. You know, there's no way they can hang with them.
I think it's the right approach too to flood the zones and keep everything in front, because Patrick Mahomes by instinct wants to go deep.
Yeah.
If he has any opportunity to hit you with the deep ball, he's going to. He has to override his own instincts to take all the short stuff. And he's proving as he grows that he's willing to do it, but he doesn't want to.
Well, you saw that play at the end in the fourth quarter, which it could have ended up being a huge turning point when Jason Pierre-Paul got the helmet, hitting the helmet penalty, and he threw the interception to Sean Murphy Bunting. That was a horrible pass.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, he got into that mode of drifting back, and I'm just going to throw it up here and have my guy make a play. But if that interception stands, the timing on that, I think Bruce Arians said it was a 2-minute, 30-second turnaround in terms of how much time got elapsed, you know, for the Chiefs having the ball after that point. And so those kind of plays can cost you games. Now, you know, he's gotten away with that throughout his career. But, yeah, I mean, you certainly don't want to have him back there getting into a rhythm and feeling good about going down the field. You want him handing the ball off 45 times.
Okay, so I made this analogy earlier this week, and you're a guy that likes to play pickup basketball at the gym, so I'm see if this resonates with you at all. But to me, having Patrick Mahomes is like when you play a game, a pickup, and there's one team that just running the court, and they got a guy on their team, and they let you feel like you're in the game. You know, they let you score. Yeah, we're up 7-5. We're feeling pretty good, but they always get to 10 first. And it's like, because they always have that one guy that when they need it, he's going to go score. When they need a stop, he's going to block your shot, whatever. And that team, they never fully just beat everybody 10-1, but they always win. And I just feel like the Chiefs kind of feel like that team. Whatever you need from Patrick Mahomes, it seems like that's what he's going to get you to win the game.
Yeah, I mean, he's at that level, certainly. He's, look, we've said it many times. He's a generational talent. He's the best player in the game. You know, he's got a great chance of being the best quarterback ever. Got, you know, ways to go to get there, but, you know, he's certainly off to a great start in that race. But, you know, the things that I see when I watch the Chiefs now, and it's, I think part of it, and I think most people do this, I do it, you judge them based off championship ability.
Not right, so that's the standard.
Who they're beating. So it's like whatever's happening. And so I do think that he's able to, he's the ultimate deodorant.
Yes.
You know, he's able to mask a lot of things that, you know, whenever I have conversations with people about it who aren't really, you know, big football people, like, oh, Patrick did this, did that. It was great. But you also say, well, when they're doing all these funky plays at the goal line, why can't they just run the ball in? You know, or when the defense is giving up these long plays, like, that can be an issue down the road. And so I do think that he's able to create the illusion of no matter what happens, he can get you out of it. But I think that's also an illusion. I think you always have to have the other things around him be there for him to be at a high level. I mean, it's this time last year, they were winning games with him throwing for 200 yards. But the defense was playing better. Special teams was better. They were more consistent running the football in four-minute offense. Things that I think that they know matter in the end of the day. You know, it's like it's cute when they do all this stuff at the goal line and all the whatever, the black pearl and everything else and reverses. But it's just like you're at the two-yard line. You can't run the ball in the end zone.
Well, to me, I think they have a better chance when they spread out and do all the cute stuff than when they try to run it right up the middle
score. Well, they took that field goal early in the game. Mm-hmm. It was fourth and one. And to me, that was Andy Reid saying, okay, we can't run against this front.
Yeah.
And so you're going to see some teams in the playoffs that are going to challenge you there. And granted, they can score so many ways. I'm not diminishing what they can do offensively. But there are things that I see sometimes and I say, well, okay, that's a little bit of a red flag to me. It's not always going to be we're going to go out there and he's going to throw for 450 and Tyreek's going to have 200 and Kelsey's going to have 150 and we're just going to blow out, run out of the gates and blow people away. I mean, end of the day, the Bucs figured some things out and they, whatever, outscored them the last three quarters and slowed them down offensively.
So the Chiefs are not going to be put to the test by a championship caliber offense in either of the next 2 weeks. They got the Broncos and then the Dolphins, who have gone back to Fitzmagic now all of a sudden. Those are two bottom third offenses. The defense should show.
Is he starting?
Well, he started last game, right? Fitzmagic?
Do we know?
He started last game.
Tua was the starter.
I don't know what they're going to do. I mean, it seems to me like they're taking it. I haven't seen the latest, but Fitz started last game.
Yeah. Well, that's the Jets.
I mean,
they're going to put the Broncos receiver in that game and win that game. Whatever that guy's name was. I felt so bad for that guy.
Dude.
I was like, this guy is out there playing his butt off knowing that I'm not going to complete a pass. I may not complete a pass this game. He got one. It was like a scream.
But you know what? I don't know what his NFL career is ever going to be. I mean, he's a practice squad guy right now. Someday he's going to sit back and tell his kids, I started an NFL game as a quarterback.
Yeah. He's going to be a trivia question, the ultimate trivia question.
No playbook. Yeah. Didn't know any of the plays.
I was like, I want to watch this just out of curiosity.
Yeah.
And about 5 minutes in, I was like, this is unwatchable. I can't take any more of this.
I'll tell you what. The thing that was like, you're watching him against Taysom Hill.
Yeah.
And you're like, it's like there's two wide receivers playing quarterback right now. I mean, I got Taysom Hill. I signed him on my fantasy squad because I figured he's going to run in at least two touchdowns, you know, in this game.
Ultimate fighter.
Yeah.
He's more like a mixed martial arts guy out there. They put somebody in a chokehold and a quarterback.
But the Chiefs' defense, this is two opportunities for them to try to show that they're better because they're not. They should not be. If they give up big-time offensive performances against the Broncos and against the Dolphins, then there's real problems on defense.
Well, here's what concerns me, and I'm not trying to sound the alarm. The Chiefs are there. I would say if they played Pittsburgh right now, they'd win six. If they played 10 times, they'd win six of them. So I definitely favor the Chiefs.
Did you hear
more.
That, Kansas City? Jeff Chedia says 6 out of 10 against the Steelers. Yeah,
but what concerns me is how much the Chiefs have to blitz to create pressure.
And I agree
like
with
they
that.
They were blitzing a lot in that game.
The only time they got pressure on Brady was through the blitz, it seemed like.
And so wherever Frank Clark and Chris Jones, whatever's going on with them, they got to get it figured out because that's a recipe for disaster. And ultimately, look, they did a great job of holding the Bucs to a field goal in that first drive of the third quarter. But they score a touchdown there. Obviously, that's a difference in the game, you know. And I think they didn't score a touchdown because the play calling was so bizarre. All of a sudden, you drive down the field throwing the ball to Gronkowski, and it's just like, hey, Leonard Fournette, your turn. Get some of this.
Yeah, Gronk was a problem for the Chiefs during that second half, especially. Mm-hmm. But I would say this: they score, then that's the difference of the game. And then instead of getting the first down to close the game out, Patrick Mahomes drives down the field and scores, and they win. I mean,
that game had the feel of Tennessee last year. At the end of it, it felt like they were in the same situation where they had been dominant offensively. They got down to a four-minute situation where they had the lead. All they had to do was close it out. And granted, very risky play calling. But again, it's like to have to make your quarterback do all that stuff to make it happen. Mm-hmm. I get that you're doing it because you have Patrick Mahomes. But the chances of disaster are also pretty high, as you saw in the Tennessee game, where they, you know, screen was covered. He had to throw in the ground. And all of a sudden, you know, other team has the ball and they're scoring and the game's over.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's what I'm saying. Like, having Mahomes is the ultimate advantage, but it also masks the fact that you're doing some things that are really risky and can come back and bite you.
Well, yeah. I mean, look, Aaron Rodgers has won one Super Bowl. Drew Brees has won one Super Bowl. We've talked about that a lot, that as much as the great quarterback makes you have a team that's capable, you know, it doesn't win the whole thing for you. You got to have some other things, and we'll talk more about that. We're going to take a break. You ready to talk with Stephen St. John? You missed him, haven't
SSJ.
You?
SSJ.
SSJ is going to join us next. We got Jeff Chedia in studio right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We've been celebrating a lot of birthdays lately. Jeff turned 50 last week.
Yep.
Stephen St. John had his birthday. Did you know yesterday was Stephen's birthday?
I did not. How old
would you like to take this opportunity to wish Stephen St. John a happy birthday?
Can you hear me?
Hi, Jeff.
Happy birthday, brother.
Thank you.
It's good to hear your voice there.
Thank you. I'm only two behind you. I'm 48, baby.
Are you? Okay. Wait until you get 50. We'll really get it going. Although I always tell people, when you get to 50, you get a whole bunch of questions about how it feels to be 50. And I always tell people, 40's the game changer, because you go to the doctor and all of a sudden he's getting the KY jelly out. Looking at you sideways.
My doc told me not to 45. I saw my doc last week.
That's when it really changes.
You just keep switching doctors and push your age back.
Not 45, right? It's like absolutely.
If you don't mind, could you text me your doc's number?
Yeah.
So, please.
Well, he said 45, so I mean you'd get the
No, when you're black it's 40. They get you early.
I just keep calling doctors. Hey, can I get another checkup? And they're like, no, you've been in every week this week.
How you doing?
You know what? I'm getting there, man. I'm getting better. You know, I'm glad to be on the show. You know, and really glad to be on with you, because I want you to just go with me here a minute.
All right.
Jim Harbaugh struggling at Michigan.
Okay.
A vacancy with the Detroit Lions.
Oh yeah.
What's 2 + 2?
Yeah. 0. Oh,
no.
That's what it equals. 0.
No.
That's that Michigan math.
That's not right.
No.
That's fair.
No. 0. Yeah.
I was just throwing something out there to see if it would stick.
Hey, look. Hey, there's a big void over there. There's no GM. The head coach is gone. That's the kind of job that would attract a Jim Harbaugh. You know, the owner, the woman who's running the Lions now, Sheila Ford Hamp, lives in Ann Arbor. So
there is
that. If there's an NFL job that he would fit nicely into, it would be that one, just for all the reasons that are obvious. But, you know, I'm trying to, you know, limit my pain right now. As I said when the show started, Michigan football is on hiatus right now for 7 days with COVID, and it's been the best thing that's happened this year. As far as Michigan football goes. So I'm hoping that they can just ride this out, just go have a couple parties. Couple house parties and in the season now, you know. So, but how are you? But you sound good, man. You sound really good.
You know, it's you know, I'm kind of doing this, you know, piece by piece, and gives me a chance to catch my breath and recover in between segments. So I'm trying to work my way back up to 4 hours. But yeah, it feels good to be back on the air. It's it seems like forever. It's 3 weeks, longest 3 weeks of my life. It seemed like, but. I did a little tried to do some commercials in the last 45 minutes, and Lebo was making fun of me because I could not get through commercials very well, the 60 seconds. But I'm getting there, man. It's
what
good.
A jerk
it's good.
Lebo is.
Yeah, well, you know, now he's actually very supportive. Todd's my rock besides Susan.
So this is the first day you've been on the air. Or were you on the air yesterday?
Yesterday I was on for a couple of segments, and then today we did three segments, and so. It's getting there, man. It's great to be able to get on the air and talk to you guys and everything else. So it's because I mean, you know, mentally you kind of go stir crazy, especially when you're quarantined in a bedroom for 2 weeks. So yeah, it's good to be back, and it's good to talk football and good to talk about stuff other than medicine and doctors and everything else. So it's been great for me the past couple of days to get back on the show and talk about Patrick Mahomes and talk about Travis Kelce becoming the greatest tight end in Chiefs history. It's all these different things. But I wanted to ask you this. So we were talking. So I mentioned Detroit. Mm-hmm. Of the current vacancies right now, if you were Eric Bieniemy, if you were a head coaching candidate, if you had your choice of any of the vacancies right now, what would you pick? You got Atlanta, you got Houston, you got Detroit. Am I missing anything?
Not the Jets yet, but
but what would
current
you,
openings?
Chargers, Broncos, are those going to be up for grabs?
I think they'll be in play.
What would you like? How would you rank those if you're Eric Bieniemy?
The ones that are open right now, I would say, we got Houston, Atlanta, and the Lions. Houston's the best one because you got the best quarterback.
They have a good strength and conditioning program.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. PED popping. It's the worst one in terms of the what you can do as far as making moves because you got very little draft capital. Atlanta's intriguing just because they're starting to play a lot better. And I've always thought they were a better team than their record showed. But, you know, if you're talking about the future and you can have a quarterback in play, I think that Houston's the best place to go. But
Is Deshaun Watson a better quarterback than Matt Ryan?
Dude, have you seen his numbers?
No.
Look at Deshaun Watson's numbers.
They're ridiculous.
He is like, if they were a winning team, he might be the MVP right now.
His numbers are sick.
His numbers over the last seven games have been like, it's like 70%, like 20 touchdowns, two interceptions. It's not even, like, he's playing at as high a level
as
Mahomes.
Isn't Matt Ryan putting up ridiculous numbers this year too?
I think he's doing well, but it's like people are forgetting. Actually, they're 4-7 right now. They have a chance of finishing 9-7. Look at Deshaun Watson's numbers. He is playing.
I'm going to look him up right now.
Out of his mind. So, you know, I think that.
So that's no question. Watson over Matt Ryan is no question.
Matt Ryan's like 37 years old, isn't he? 36, 37.
I don't know how many more years he's got in him.
Yeah. And so I look at, of all the jobs that could potentially be open, the Chargers, if Anthony Lynn goes, that's the best one because now you've got everything you need with a young quarterback who is, you know, going to be literally cheap for the next 3-4 years.
Would you just keep Anthony Lynn on the staff for clock management?
You know, I'm a big Anthony Lynn fan as a person. I like him a lot. And I think he's done, you know, I think he's been snake bit by injuries. But when you lose as many close games as they lost over the last couple of years, it's hard not to point the finger and look for a new voice in the locker room. So, yeah, I feel like when you're, whatever they are, 2-8, it's hard to keep your job. When you've had two straight losing seasons, and you got that much talent,
Deshaun's numbers are nice, baby. They're looking good.
You looking at him?
He's right ahead of Matt Ryan in terms of yards, and he's got 24 touchdowns, 5 picks. Matt Ryan's got 17 touchdowns, 8 picks.
But I think he hasn't thrown an interception in like 5 games.
Is that right?
Yeah,
five interceptions is a nice little number.
And sprinkling Watson's got like 300 yards rushing and a couple of rushing touchdowns too. So
I'm guessing Matt Ryan doesn't have as many rushing yards.
I think you're safe with that guess.
Yeah, I think that's a career for Matt Ryan. But I think Eric Bieniemy is going to have some great opportunities, and yeah, I think that in some ways it's weird how the timing works for you because the teams that he would have been with this past season, I mean, Carolina's done okay, but most of those, or all those teams are losing teams right now.
Yeah, Watson hasn't thrown a pick since week 5.
Yeah, there you go. So he's just been on fire, quietly been on fire. It's the same way with Aaron Rodgers.
Starts without a pick.
Yeah, I mean, Patrick Mahomes would be the MVP right now, but Aaron Rodgers has had 5 games where he's had 4 touchdowns and 0 interceptions.
Rodgers,
it's like almost a record.
Rodgers has been ridiculous. I mean, it's there's a group of quarterbacks that have played at this incredible level. And then there is a group of quarterbacks that we all thought were on that level that are playing like garbage right now. And Carson Wentz is at the top of that list. What happened? What happened to that to him?
I think Nick Foles happened to him. I think that's what they got some context. They got some perspective. So it's always going to be looking back at that season as the ultimate barometer of what could have been for him.
But Wentz was good at one point,
He's good. He got hurt. The problem with Wentz, and I think people in Philadelphia will tell you this inside the building, it's been said publicly, I think, is that he tries to do too much sometimes. And that team, ever since they won a championship, has been riddled with injuries, especially at the skill positions. And when you watch them play over the last couple of years, when you're handing the ball off to guys like Boston Scott and your only receiver of note is right now is Dallas Goedert, I think Alshon Jeffrey's back. I mean, it's like who was the guy who was DeSean Jackson has not been able to stay healthy. Jeffrey hasn't been able to stay healthy. Ertz has gotten hurt. I mean, all these guys have been banged up at some point or another. I think they've been throwing a practice squad guys. And so when you get in there and you have that mentality, I thought, be honest with you, I thought he played pretty well down the stretch last year and didn't get enough credit for it.
Because shouldn't you be singling out the GM, though, here? I mean, seriously, though, like, look at what they've done with these drafts. And to your point, DeSean Jackson signing, that's a horrible signing. The guy was done. You brought him back? I mean, what a bad signing that was.
I agree with you.
Hurts in the second round, I get that. That's a smart pick if you don't have a $59 million quarterback sitting in your starting spot. So you could have done something with that second-round pick. Their offseason moves, look at DK Metcalf they passed for J.J. Whiteside. I mean, are you kidding me? Like, how can you look at those two guys and just by looking at them not take DK Metcalf?
It's a valid point, and that's why what I was saying is that I think you have to look at what's around him and his mentality of I got to do more stuff to make things happen. I think he's always one of those guys who wants – he's got some Baker Mayfield in him. You know, Baker Mayfield wants to do a lot of stuff and make things happen. But when he played within himself, he's a pretty good quarterback. And the problem is when you don't have a lot of weapons out there, you can't play within yourself. You got to go out there and find ways to win games.
And no protection. They've had 10 different offensive linemen sets going into 11 games. That's crazy.
Yeah. Look at this last draft. Who do they draft number 21 at wide receiver?
Jalen Reagor.
Who went number 22?
Oh, Justin Jefferson?
No.
Chase Claypool.
Justin Jefferson went with the next pick.
Yeah. That's LSU, and that was there's a lot of people out there saying that Jefferson was the best wide receiver in the draft.
Mm-hmm. It looks that way right now.
Right.
Yeah. That's just a bad. That's a bad, bad miss right there.
Yep. Like you wanted a speed player, and he's not really doing a ton for you, or at least not doing as much as those guys. Chase Claypool's
Claypool was a second round pick, wasn't he? If I remember.
T. Higgins too.
Yep.
It's crazy to think like we talk so much about misses at other positions, but the wide receiver spot. I thought this year's rookie class of wide receivers was going to just tear up the NFL.
And it's hard to completely judge it fairly.
It's
because they did not have a full offseason and an integration into the league was completely different. So that's not an excuse. I'm just saying that is the reality.
Yeah. But look at the numbers that Justin Jefferson, Chase Claypool, and T. Higgins are putting up.
Yeah. But then you look at like both of the kids from Alabama haven't done a whole lot this year.
That's not Judy's fault.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's in a bad spot. I mean, that's some of it.
Well, and all three of those guys you mentioned who are playing well, they're playing with other good receivers. So Justin Jefferson's got Adam Thielen. Claypool's got Juju Smith-Schuster. T. Higgins has A.J. Green. I mean, so that helps. That helps. You're getting a lot less coverage. You're getting a lot more wisdom in the receiver room about how to do stuff, how to run routes. You're seeing how to handle your business. And so, you know, it'll bounce itself out. But you're going to see more good receivers come in because just as with college quarterbacks,
right,
these guys are throwing the ball more. It's easier to play. You're not getting hit. You can just do more stuff.
I think it's just interesting, though, because you see some – it seems like you can get some real value at the wide receiver position in the second and third round over the past few years.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't that interesting? Like, I just – we're talking about DK Metcalf, and we're talking about Chase Claypool and some of these guys – they weren't the first receivers taken.
You know? Devontae Adams was a second round pick when the Packers took him. I mean, you can find a lot of depth. I mean, look at Tyler Lockett was a third round pick, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Second or third round pick. Tyreek Hill was a fifth round pick that they turned into a receiver. And so I just think the game has changed so much now, and it really is hard when you watch college football to find high quality corners, guys who can cover, but you can find a zillion guys who can run routes for you and get open and make big plays for you. And they'll come in and play early because they're doing a lot more pro concepts or pro teams are using a lot more college concepts in their schemes that allow these guys to transition earlier.
I don't know if you guys already talked about this, but do you believe what Jim Schwartz went up to
no
DK Metcalf
before the game?
Before the game.
I think Schwartz is looking for a job with the Bucs staff. I think he's angling to get on the.
You're not quite on his level yet.
What's happening here?
I coach Megatron. You're not there yet.
why would you go up and say that to an opposing player before the game? I'm just curious.
Yeah, well, knowing Schwartz, he probably said it in a nice way, and trying to, hey man,
really?
you're good, man. But that's Coach Megatron. You're getting there. You ain't him though, but you're getting there.
I like that. DK Metcalf posted the Jordan meme of, and I took that personally.
Right. Like, why wouldn't you? Like, how would that not motivate the hell out of you right before the game? Like, oh, really? Okay.
Okay, coach. How close am I now? And then walk him out of here. Right.
It's like, oh, so I'm not quite at the best receiver maybe ever to play the game level. Okay. Thanks, coach. Thanks. You know, that's unbelievable if you really said that to him. It's unbelievable.
Well, you know what's funny? You know, I was going to ask this question of Nate because he asked me this last week when I was in here about the Steelers playing the Ravens. You're going to have some Wednesday afternoon football, baby.
Great day.
We found something that does not budge for the NFL. Everything in the world stops for the NFL except the Rockefeller Christmas tree lighting ceremony. That does not move.
A Wednesday afternoon football game.
Hey, in our work schedule, I love it. I'm fine with it. Hey, this is fantastic, you know? Somebody else going to have to pick up the kids from school.
What time is it on anyway?
2:40 Central Time.
2:40
Central. Oh, is it really?
Not even like a round number, 2:40.
That's what it says. That's what it says on my little ESPN.com right here, 2:40 Central Time. Mm. Week 12 stretches all the way to Wednesday. What do you think of the way the NFL's handled the Ravens situation?
You know, well, it's...
The running backs are going to fly tomorrow because they still have to quarantine today. The team's flying today, but they have one more day of quarantine they got to do, so they're supposed to fly tomorrow, Dobbins and Ingram, but then they can play.
I think you probably should have canceled the game by now or moved it somewhere. A Week 18 scenario has always been in play. It just seems now they got so far down the road of trying to make it happen. Had to be a week down the road and still trying to make it happen while guys are testing positive and trying to – it's just – and I feel bad for the Steelers because it's the second time this year they got to deal with this. And, you know, it's – we said this back in August, man. It was going to start getting ugly around November, December as COVID numbers started going up. You started having more people testing positive. And I know the league wants to make it happen. I think the league's done a really good job of working to make it happen. But there is something to be said for – I'm not a big fan of watching a diminished product. And so, and I'm watching that Broncos game. Yeah, it's painful to watch it. I get that you want to make a statement about COVID restrictions and protocols, and okay, you know, don't get to have a quarterback for the team, but it's like, you really want to watch that? Do I want to watch the Ravens, who are still, you know, pretty diminished roster wise, play a super important game for the playoffs when there's other options there? Like, I just don't think that's. I think there's better ways to approach it, but. You know, I'm not the one calling the shots, so.
I don't think there are any easy decisions on this stuff, that's for sure. But it's kind of like they've just been kicking the can down the road with this game, hoping and hoping that it's going to turn out okay. And look, if you're a Chiefs fan, screw with the Steelers all you want, NFL. Yeah. You know, like keep messing with their schedule. Have them play this game, then Monday against Washington, you know, and we'll see where it goes. We'll take a break. We've got Steven with us. We've got Jeff Chedia with us as well. One more segment on the Border Patrol right after this. We've got Jeff Chedia in studio. We've got Steven St. John with us. As Week 12 wraps up tomorrow with the Ravens taking on the Steelers. Do you think the Ravens can give them a game? I mean, with RG3 at quarterback and all this, like, what do you think this is just going to be a wild game because of all the crazy things that have happened? Steelers are still a 10-point fade, by the way, Jake. Yeah.
Well, I think it's going to be tough because they've got so many guys who've been affected by this.
Yeah.
What is it, like 22 people total in the organization?
Yeah.
I mean, big name guys. Calais Campbell is still hurt. Brandon Williams is still out. Matthew Judon. So I think they got three or four defensive players who aren't going to be able to play in this game, even though Mark Ingram and J.K. Dobbins will be back. What I will say about RG3 that intrigues me is that he throws the ball better than Lamar Jackson does. He's proven he throws the ball better. And so you may see some dimensions to their offense that you wouldn't see there with Lamar. And I do know that. I talked to RG3 last year and I was doing a story on Lamar, and he said, I came to Baltimore for this offense. I came so I could have a chance to showcase myself at some point and learn some things. And so I'm sure he's seeing this as a great chance to audition for a job down the road. If Greg Roman gets a coaching job, head coaching job somewhere, he might be somebody who goes with him. RG3 wants to still play football. And when he was right, he was pretty good. So, yeah, I think Pittsburgh's going to win the game, but the Baltimore Ravens offense may look better.
What do you think about 10 points?
It's a lot of points. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's I'm just, you know, it's – you saying would I take it? Is that what you're asking me? Or is
I'm just a mouthpiece for Jake. Right?
Jake's like a side.
Jake's got a pencil out right now and a piece of paper, so –
yeah. I'm getting all these Ask Jeff text messages from Jake right now. So.
You're not supposed to tell anybody that, Steven. But
I'm out of practice.
I think Steelers cover this one, but it's the sad part. Going back to what I was just saying in the last segment is that this is such a huge game, and it could have been the kind of game the Steelers lost, given division rivalry and the importance of it to the Ravens. And you know, if the Steelers lost, it would be certainly help the Chiefs out in that bid to get number one. So a lot of things could have been affected by this. And I just think it's going to end up not being – it's not going to be as competitive as it could be.
Chiefs favored by 14 against the Broncos this weekend.
In some places. It's been taken off the board in others.
Now, are they going to have quarterbacks? Do we know for sure?
I don't know. I don't know what situation.
Like, I know they've taken it off the board and they're not allowing you
for that reason.
Yeah. I don't know. Usually – it's usually when – a couple things. When there's question marks on the quarterback, or if the money was just so ridiculously, the amount of money going in on the Chiefs, even at 14, was so uneven, they just had to rip it down off the board.
That sounds pretty light to me. I think that's going to be a 40-6 type game. Oh. And wasn't there talk about Broncos punishing the quarterbacks in some
That's what the head coach kind of alluded to that, but then did you see Drew Lock's mom and the social media post that she had defending Drew Lock and the quarterbacks?
What'd you say?
Wow, go and read that.
Is this on Twitter? Is this where I haven't
seen it? Was on everywhere. Everyone was retweeting it. Yeah, there's a story.
You just go Google Drew Lock's mom, you'll find it.
Okay. Nate, read it to us.
Out loud? Okay.
Why not? No, I mean, it made its way, you know, through the Denver media and now the NFL media.
So she was explaining what happened. Well, you know, one thing
shame on the many for thinking they can speak of others in damning ways, she wrote on Twitter in part. Here is the truth. Drew and the QB room requested permission to watch film. They came to the facility in their own time to put in more work. His leadership, which seems to be in question by some, brought them into this predicament. Drew asking for more commitment of his QB room than just a normal NFL day. Drew and the QBs even requesting a room at the facility rather than risking trouble and meeting at an off-campus site. There's a lot more to it than that. You want me to keep going here? Or?
Happy Mother's Day,
I think you covered it. But I thought that when the whole thing came down, I thought it could be something like that. And I've always said that when it comes to this deal, when it comes to people testing positive or whatever, it can be something that people construe as being nefarious when, in fact, people are just doing something they always do. You know, whether it's eating food together or whatever it is, you know, talking to your friend, you see him at the car on the way to the parking lot, and you end up catching something, and people end up demonizing you for something that is a lot more, a lot less nefarious than what people think it is. Yeah, I do think Drew Lock and those guys have taken a lot more abuse than they deserve for this.
I don't blame the NFL for coming down hard on guys, you know, letting their guard down, because it is like eternal vigilance is the price right now. I actually think this is a great post from his mom, by the way.
It's always good when the head coach doesn't accept responsibility for anything and blames everyone else.
Yeah, exactly. You're responsible for what happens in your building. But like the Ravens,
and as long as he's the head coach, they ain't doing nothing.
No, and they got blown out by the Chiefs last time. You know, it was like 43-16, something like that. I mean, but to me, like, you take it back to the Ravens, you got a strength and conditioning coach that has symptoms that's not telling anybody about it walking around the facility. to me, that deserves far more punishment than what we're talking about with the Broncos. At least is what we know right now.
I agree with you. It's hypocritical in some ways. And again, the Chiefs have had it in their building. No one's saying, hey, what was Rick Burkholder doing? Was he out partying someplace? And you just catch it. You're going to get it at some point. You're likely to get it at some point just because you're walking around, because it's in the air, it's around. There's no way
you can 100%. But the Chiefs' protocols seem to be pretty airtight. Every time they've had a case, it hasn't exploded like this.
Yeah, well, I don't think the Broncos players had it. They didn't test positive. Right, more close contact.
Yeah, it was close contact. Yeah, because they found out about the mask. Yeah.
And so, look, it's... I guess it's water under the bridge now, but I do agree with you that the Ravens situation, even though there are different dimensions to it, there are variables to it that are similar to what happened in Denver. You know, I think it looks like an outbreak. They want to make it a safety issue, but it's a safety issue because somebody wasn't following the protocols. Mm-hmm. So why are they getting a better deal than the Broncos got last weekend?
Well, we all agree the Chiefs are going to blow out the Broncos. That's the bottom line.
I think that's safe. That's safe. And Jake's not going to get that bet down. Jake's over here.
I'm waiting for him to open back up.
That's right. I think that was you putting all that money on there.
Maybe. He can move the line. And we all can agree that Harbaugh is a good fit in Detroit. And I ain't Lions.
Were you on when we were talking about this before, about the Lions coming up? Remember that conversation a few months back?
I don't know why I think a lot about the Detroit Lions now because of you, and it's not healthy.
It's not.
It's not good.
It's not. In fact, it's worse than what you just went through the last 3 weeks.
Yeah.
It's called COVID-20 in Detroit.
I watch their games, and every time I don't like it, but I watch it anyway. So,
right.
You know.
That's the kind of a sadistic way of looking at the word. Right. Or is it masochism? I think it's masochism.
masochism is when you punish yourself.
That's right.
Jeff, thank you, man. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, guys. Take care.
Steven?
Good seeing you, Steven.
Yeah.
Hearing your voice.
We'll see you in the morning, Steven. All right?
Bye-bye.
Get some rest. All right. The Zone is next right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.